body.
Ah yes, the magnificent Trolley Sour Bright Crawler, also known as Trollicus brightolus. The worm's captivating neon colour makes it an easy, gummy prey.
Trolley!
It's a surprisingly sour, invitingly chewy, staggeringly snackable species unlike anything else found on this planet.
Eat me!
Delicious. Visit Trolley.com to shop now.
Trolley, eat me!
Sergeant and Mrs. Smith, you are going to love this house.
Is that a tub in the kitchen?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Big Travel Podcast, exploring life stories through travel with me, your host, Lisa Francesca-Nand. Exploring the hearts, minds and traditions of cultures and people around the world is Dr. Mandeep Rai's passion. And in her new book, The Values Compass, recommended by the Dalai Lama, no less. And indeed on this podcast, we question what makes us who we are. Why are the Turkish hospitable, the Jordanians helpful and the Argentinians passionate? Mandeep has travelled to over 150 countries and loves more than anything how chance encounters with strangers when travelling can change your life. Oh, and she has some very inspirational thoughts on how we can embrace our own core values. Dr. Mandeep Rai on the Big Travel Podcast. So we are in the O2. I thought I'd explain that. If anyone, UK listeners, will know that the O2 is a big domed tent building in London, consistently voted one of the top venues in the world for concerts and that sort of thing. But it's a little bit noisy. It sounds a bit like an airport because we've got planes flying over and all sorts. But I'm here with Mandeep Rai. And Mandeep, why don't we start with telling us a little bit about yourself? Because I know you're incredibly well-travelled, far more well-travelled than I am, as a BBC correspondent and in business and more. And you've just wrote this incredible book on world values. And you are indeed an expert on global values. What on earth does that mean?
Okay, so I have travelled now 150 countries. And I chose 101 of them for this book. Actually, 102, because I give you a little bit of a bonus chapter, but 101, essentially. I basically distilled each country into a value. So what I mean by global values, those values that you're struck by, the gems you're struck by when you first go to a country. So the hospitality in Turkey. We all think we're hospitable, but the way the Turkish always buy a house and try and keep a guest room, will always have their second living room as their guest living room. We'll always think about, well, we'll just give up our bedroom if we need to for our guests. It goes above and beyond. It's something we all aspire to, but they go above and beyond. And you can, that would be an example, but there are so many examples. It's basically the beautiful gems that you, we all travel. We're speaking to an audience that are of travelers. So as soon as you hit the ground and you notice that there are these jewels and gems of, say, for example, Jordan, the way that there's kind of this helpful nature. There's this proverb there that if a stranger crosses your path or comes to your door, don't even ask their name for 3 days. Just do what they ask for 3 days. Who knows what trauma or what they've been through? And it's that type of philosophy that has, actually, I think it's from the Quran. It's what Prophet Muhammad experienced and then kind of spoke about. It's that type of philosophy that has then gone throughout the whole society, where there's this deep sense of we're just going to be helpful, and you don't see it on the outside. You might think, oh my goodness, this is not what I would expect, but when you go into the country and you see that there's this kind of way of being, it's only but inspiring. There's this famous line of, you only know true kindness when you're on the road, like the kindness of strangers. But it's that manifested in all its kind of different forms and different nuances. So I could give you another example. The way there's this passion in Argentina. You know, there'll be a protest about anything and everything, and people will often not turn up at the office because, oh, we just got caught up in such and such protest. Or the way that they dance tango, but actually it's like giving their whole body to it. Or the way the whole country stops for football. It's like nothing's done in halves. They just give it all their all. And there's something really beautiful. Like every country, culture, environment has its own unique circumstances, its own unique geography, history, political, economic climate. But within that context, people have evolved with a certain attribute more than others and use that to evolve into their higher selves.
Do you think it's more important than ever to focus on these global values when negative images, you know, we've got an awful rise of the far right, there's a lot of racism and prejudice in the world right now, it certainly feels like it. Do you think it's more important than ever to celebrate these, what sounds like you're celebrating positive values?
Absolutely. I've been born and brought up in the media, and I feel that the amount of, unfortunately, what do we know that's positive about Paraguay or Papua New Guinea or Peru? Very little. And that's such a shame because there are so many gems. And what we do in the news is kind of tell you only the disasters, only the salacious stories, only those negative stories. That's not what you want in your psyche or in your aura or in your energy field. And so this is telling you about the other 99% that's happening in that country that you never get to hear about. Why wouldn't you want to know about the other 99%, right?
And that's what travel writing does, I guess. It's which you've, you know, essentially written a wonderful travel book, and it celebrates the positive. I mean, of course, you know, there's certain things like I absolutely adore Argentina and the passion and everything that you talk about. When you're going to a different country as, say, a British person, and you have different values, sometimes you sort of get swept away in the other country's values, and other times you're like, why doesn't this work? Why, when I go to a meeting in Bangkok, do 20 other people have to come along when it's a meeting that you and I would have here? You know, sometimes they can work out as frustration, those global values, the jarring ones, I guess.
Well, I guess that even that has a principle behind it. So, for example, in Thailand, that idea of gerong chai, like being deeply respectful, and so respectful that you don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. And so they allow 20 people into the meeting because they wouldn't want to, they think about the other person and what they would feel like if they were excluded, for example, or not wanting to, you know, not wanting to upset, not wanting to say a harsh word. So you could see it as, oh, they say yes even when they mean no. But you could also see it as they care so much about, deeply so much about my feelings. So yes, partly this is a book about travel and positive values. But actually what this book is about is you as a leader. And what I mean by you as a leader, it's actually an introspective book. So it takes you outside into the world for you to go back inside. And within 15 minutes, this kind of exercise that you do that helps you figure out of these 100 possible values, what are your top 20? In fact, what are your top five? And to prioritize your five. So now the new decade starting, for the next 10 years or the next 5 years or the next 6 months, depending on what's happening in your life, what are your top five priorities, core values, and you prioritize them in accordance to what matters to you most.
What could they be? What give us an example of what your core priorities could be, core values.
So we just spoke, as we were walking up, we were just speaking about how we both had young children. So the first 5 years, we spoke about how actually they become a priority when they're super young. That might be an example. So also, family is really important all the time. When you've got small children, maybe they become more of a priority than, let's say, travel that we spoke about. Or if you've got sick parents, or if you've got, I had this dream to run a marathon, suddenly health became that priority, and it didn't matter what happened. Every other morning, I had to run, because if I don't, I'm never going to meet this goal, for example, or I'm going to cut out sugar, even though a party's going on, or I'm going to... That would be an example. Or if you're
even
going
though we've just been given a little shot glass full of Smarties,
it's indeed quite appealing. One, we're not about to run a marathon, and two, we haven't touched them yet.
Yeah,
but the idea of the book is that it's a tool in your back pocket that you use to bring out the best of yourself, given what you decide is the timeline and given what's ahead of you in your life.
So let's talk a little bit about you and your travels, because I know you're very well traveled and you're of Indian origin, but born here in the UK.
I was born, my grandparents moved here during the Second World War, because 80% of the Indian military is actually Sikh, and I'm Sikh heritage. And so, I'm Sikh, not Sikh heritage. Both sets of grandparents came at that time, and actually my mother's family then moved to America and my father's family settled here. And it was really about, for them, building the nation at the time and just working super hard to do that. And my generation, I guess, had a slightly different experience. And now my children's generation, which are now fourth generation, are having a very different experience. And it's interesting that they're perhaps able to be a little bit more Indian and more cosmopolitan and more accepted and accepting than perhaps was the case previously, when there were fewer ethnic minorities are owned.
That's a very interesting point, because we talked a little bit briefly about a feeling that there's a greater level of prejudice and racism in the world right now. But it is interesting and correct, I believe, in my opinion, what you said about people also being able to embrace their cultures more, in a sense, because there's the two things are happening at the same time, is that people feel freer to express their cultures as well.
Well, we're extremely lucky here in London, because it truly is a melting pot. It's not a melting pot as in everyone's here of a different colour, but everyone's the same. It's a melting pot as in you can be from wherever you are and still hold those values and those traditions and wear that dress and speak that language. And we're super lucky to have that, because that's not the case everywhere in the world where there's a lot of immigration, maybe, but where you have to become of that nation.
And you know what, I absolutely, you know, I've cried about this recently, you know, in political, there's been some political turmoil, and I'm just so proud of London for being the place where there's the most immigration, and for actually embracing that, and for overall, generally, people getting on and enjoying that culture and embracing that culture and embracing the fact that you can get any type of food you want at any time of the day from any country around the world. I can't think of many things that you can't access like that. And yeah, we all, in the majority of times, you know, live together side by side and happily.
Yes, and you can bring your history and your culture and your values here and live them out. Whereas in other places, sometimes you have to leave them behind in order to assimilate. And I think in previous generations here, more so, we also had to leave them behind. I grew up in Gloucestershire, where very much everyone else was, you know, Anglo-Saxon and of a particular class and of a particular background. And it was really, it's not that it wasn't welcome, it was just that you didn't speak about the other. It didn't happen. And so
did you at home, because, you know, as a child of an immigrant father from Fiji, although he's 100% Indian blood, he didn't impart any language, any culture, he just left it all behind. And I've asked him about that. I was like, you know, is there a sense of embarrassment? Because I was certainly, it's awful to admit, you know, I didn't want to be different at school. I wanted to be like my little blonde friends, and they told me I was too ugly to play fairies. I imagine it was a colour thing, but they didn't out and out say it. I wanted to be the same as them. I wanted to be them. So I kind of, you know, didn't embrace any foreignness until later on. I've asked him, and he was like, nah, you know, Fiji, been there, done that. He doesn't seem to carry any weight of shame, that's the wrong word, but
you know,
any weight of shame of being an immigrant. He was like, yep, let's just embrace what we've got to offer in the UK, and then later in Spain when we move there.
Yes.
Did you have a culture at home? Did you have that Sikh, that Asian culture at home?
I think more so from my mother than my father. I would say more so the women in the family, but also actually my entire family really made an effort to speak Punjabi, to read in Gurumukhi, as in read our scriptures, the Sri Guru Granth Sahib Ji in its language, to dance Gidda and Bhangra. And all these things were passed down for sure and were really important. But actually, to my generation, I think they've become even more important. So whereas I think my father, similar to your father, was like, we're in a different country, we're just going to embrace what's here. I think our generation, well, I'm thinking, soon, my children, soon, if we're fourth, fifth generation, we would have been here for 100 years. They need to know, one, they need to know their roots, because you're always going to be the colour you are, no matter where you live.
Have you married an Asian?
I have married an Asian. Yeah. So, and
because my kid's blonde with bright blue eyes.
Oh, I see. So maybe you're not always going to be that colour, but you know.
Well, I hope they are that colour inside as well. Right. I hope they carry the colour with them in some way. It feels a bit weird when I tick the mixed race books for my five-year-old, who literally looks like he's from Scandinavia.
Okay. Well, ultimately, we're all kind of some type of mulatto. We're all some type of brown. Whether you're blonde or blue-eyed, whatever colour you are, really doesn't matter, I think. I think it's more what you're holding inside. And we have such a treasure trove of two, three cultures that why wouldn't we want to know all those languages.
Absolutely.
And embrace all of that and have that in our toolbox? What this book essentially allows you to do is to really celebrate what's out there and then celebrate these gems inside of you. And whether we have practiced our culture or not, or do know our languages or not, is not the point. It's the fact that if you really admire in your hero, if you admire generosity, or if you admire recognition, ambition, or if you admire excellence, or if you admire the way someone's really loyal to their family, whatever it is that really matters to you, not to your culture, not to your society, not to your friends or your peers on social media, or those lives that you can see or aren't, whatever, you know, not all your surroundings, but what is really important to you. And that's what it highlights. And so in terms of us entering our new decade, it's really getting to the core of what is the legacy that you want to leave? What is it that you want to be known for? What is it? What are the values that you want to take forward? So for your father, that might have been more British values, and for you, it might be something different. But it's not, I'm looking at all these cultures and countries only to give you a way of showing you all these values. I wanted it to be colorful and fun and creative, but I'm not being prescriptive, as in something is right or something is wrong, or something should be more Western or something should be more Eastern. It's about embracing, seeing the unity, and then really bringing out the best in yourself in the way that you see it and want it.
Which is so heartwarming, especially in the time of Brexit and Trump and everything like that, when it felt that, you know, it felt pre all of that, it felt we were becoming global and so integrated. And now those two things have happened. I know some people are supporting those two, but personally, as a traveller, you know, they don't make my heart sing. You know, I feel that this is a really lovely conversation to be having and a really lovely book to write at this time. So you went to 102 countries for the book, and you've been to over 150 countries. Where do we start with that? I love stories on this podcast, so I love highlights. So I would normally say, you'd say to me, you've been to so-and-so, and I'd say, so what was, you know, what was the scariest thing? Is there any time you've been in trouble? Is there any time that you felt most in love with the country? I don't know where to start. What's your, I'm just going to ask you, what's your best ever travel story?
Ah, very good question. But I mean, normally when people say to me, what's your best country, I always say I can't answer.
Me too. I keep thinking I need to like get a snappy answer just to lie to them.
Right,
otherwise it's
right.
Kind of...
Best travel story. I don't know. You know, I guess after saying all of this, if I now bring out, so the stories are always the ones where something terrible happens.
Exactly. Something's gone wrong.
Yeah, something's gone wrong. But I would just give a story today about Senegal. There's this way of being easy, like let it be, and kind of this jamme, this peace. And that I haven't seen in the way that I saw it in Senegal. It was like I arrived at the airport, leaving, having had the most magical time. I've got maybe 50 minutes before my flight departs, and I realize I don't have my passport. And I'm like, oh my goodness, this is a brand new airport where so far from the city, there's no way I can go back. And so I have no choice but to call the place I was staying and say, could you possibly bring my passport? And everyone within the airport was so cooperative. The security, the people who were checking, you know, checking me in, the people who were waiting for me on the plane, the whole thing. And all they kept doing was keeping things super light, telling jokes, telling me it's going to be okay. And it's a very similar situation I've been in both O'Hare in Chicago and in Heathrow. And I've missed my flight with actually longer time to go.
Do you because keep losing your passport? I mean, what's the problem here?
I can sometimes be late. But I guess my point is that when I saw how there's a multiple wives often in those in Senegal, I saw how joyous the second wife was as opposed to the first wife. Or I saw how when there was an accident in the street, which I saw, people weren't like rubbernecking and riling each other to make it worse or for things to blow up. People were like, it's okay, take it easy. Let's go for a walk. Let's just let this be for a bit. Let's just wait for the, you know, so-and-so to help you. We'll just give it a few moments. It was like anything to diffuse the situation. And when people have been through so many years of conflict, you realize that the last thing that they want is conflict. And actually, why would we create conflict in our lives? There's just no need for it. Whatever situation you're in, the only choice you have is to look at it in a positive way or a negative way. You might as well look at it half glass full. Always, always look at it the glass half full, right?
We try and explain that to ourselves, don't we? Like if you're in a traffic jam and you know, in a rush and you're going to miss something, you know, sometimes you can get angsty about it. But other times you think, well, actually, that could have been me up front in that accident and someone might have been hurt there. There's nothing I can do. Let's just sit here and wait it out. In fact, I had a great, and it is a travel story, I had this great moment when many years ago, I don't know how into football you are, but many years ago, England beat Germany. I think it was 5-1 in Munich, and any football fan will remember that. And I was lucky enough to go to the match. It might have been 5-2, whatever the score. It was definitely 5 to us. And I went over to Munich on the Leicester City team coach, not with the team, sadly, just with it was a corporate thing. And after the football, I mean, we won. It was just amazing. It was a massive traffic jam. Literally, we were stuck on the motorway in one position for 5 hours, and everyone got out their cars and started playing football by the roadside. And it was just one of those, because everyone was in a great mood. To be honest, now I'm thinking about it, maybe the Germans weren't in a great mood, but they were still, you know, they were still out there playing football. It's like, there's nothing we can do about it. Just get out the side of the road, have a kick about, and you know, we'll be all right.
I'll give you one other quick travel story.
Yeah, go on. No, as many as you like.
So there was this one moment, all I wanted to do was be Cuban in Cuba. I know Spanish enough. I've got, you know, the right skin, the right hair, everything's going for me. I don't carry any dollars. Oh my goodness, I've got Puma trainers. I need to get rid of them. So I had like Colgate's Puma trainers and a hammock, and I had to get rid of this stuff before I landed and then just slip in with this, the only person I knew in Cuba, which was this professor who worked for the University of Havana. So the plan was meet at the airport, pretend I'm one of them, walk past the police, walk out and just join their world and the peso economy rather than the dollar economy and sit in a hotel. And in order to get rid of all my luggage, I waited at Cancun Airport and I just needed someone to take my bag and put it onto the conveyor belt and say it was theirs. And then when they get to LA, just to let it be in lost property. And my last flight was going to be from LA and I'll just pick up my bag and go home to London.
Sounds a little bit dodgy. But,
yes,
you know, I know it's only trainers. It's not like a bag full of cocaine, but it does sound a bit dodgy.
Totally dodgy. And the person I asked said, oh my God, that could be a bag of cocaine. Are you crazy? And actually, she didn't say that. Her boyfriend said that. Her boyfriend was like a shorter than her.
Can
he was
you
a
just
pilot.
Get rid of my bag?
And he's there saying there could be cocaine, there could be heroin. You must be mad. And she said, wow, you have the same chutzpah that my son had. I will take your bag for you. And
same
so,
chutzpah.
Is a Yiddish word for, you know, that same
no,
kind of get
I
up
just
and
thought
go.
It was some, I thought you had a foot spa in your bag.
Oh, right.
Spa, yes.
So she said, you know, you've got some guts. I'm just going to do it. This is a crazy request and I'm going to go ahead and do this. So she says to the people, you know, yes, let this bag through. It's my bag. And then when she gets to the airport, she drops me an email and says, there are sniffer dogs all over your bag. What were you thinking? I'm now writing to you from NYPD Blue. This is my one piece of communication I can write. You better get here right now. And I'm scrolling down. I'm like literally having a heart attack, scrolling down. And then at the end she writes, only joking, but I didn't leave your bag at lost property. If you want your bag, you'll have to come to my home in LA.
Amazing.
And when I get to a home finally, after doing whatever I was doing in Cuba, etc., there's like Brad Pitt in her living room and she like is creating all these documentaries and films.
Brad Pitt is there.
Literally, she is in the middle of Hollywood. Whoopi Goldberg has like coffee with her. It was just an extremely, it was another world. And she offers me a job because her son, who is very, I guess, similar to me, had a real thirst for travel, became a Reuters photojournalist and was stoned to death in Somalia when they saw these white people taking photographs and a bombing had just happened by the Americans. They thought, more Americans taking advantage, we've had enough of this. And so he lost his life at 22 and she met me at 21. And it's not just me that she has kind of given this sense of, I'm here for you, anything is possible. She's done this with many people. It's an organization called Creative Visions. And that changed my life. It's because of that that I became a world, you know, worked for the BBC World Service. It's because of that that I thought, well, even before having met her, I knew I wanted to see the whole world and really understand the world. But you just need, I guess what I'm saying is when you're traveling and out there, these things happen. You meet like-minded people, miracles and serendipity and, you know, the sun shines on you in a way that is not normally the case in your everyday. So why you wouldn't travel is beyond me. Get out there, whether you're alone with someone or otherwise. Go enjoy the world. It's a beautiful, beautiful place.
God, that's such an amazing story. Are you still in touch with her?
Yes, yes. I still work for her organization. I'm on the board. And
seriously?
Yeah. Creative Visions Global is kind of what I'm looking after. She does Creative Visions in the US. And
it all because you needed to get rid of your trainers at an airport.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And this is the thing. Think about how many times you've met incredible people because you've been in a little bit of a pickle or because it's those moments that make you. It's those moments that you realize, oh, wow, there's someone there with love and generosity. And wow, you form a bond that it's just built with such history and such close tightness that you don't get that when you're going through your everyday, right?
No, you don't. And I always try and take a little bit of that traveling spirit with me, even at home. And it's not always possible, but, you know, when I'm on the tube,
yes.
I do try and speak to people.
Yes.
If you and I bumped into each other, like literally, I'd be like, oh, sorry. And I'd make an effort to, you know, to communicate in some way, you know, and to have those connections. It's not always easy. And the actual very disheartening thing is that when you don't get it back, you know, there's a lot of different nationalities here in London and not everyone has the same apologising culture the same that we have. You know, and so when you do bump into someone, you're like, oh, I'm sorry. And, you know, and someone just ignores you. If you hold
but
open
they have
the door,
a different value, right?
Exactly.
And then you'll appreciate that different
yeah,
value.
Yeah, it is a different yeah. value. And you just have to remind yourself of that, because everyone the world over is, you know, there's good and bad in everyone. I feel like I'm about to start quoting. Who am I quoting? Stevie Wonder, is it?
Or maybe just to see...
Ebony and Ivory, I think
right. Or to see everyone's kind of... That everyone comes from their own perspective. It's not necessarily good or bad. It's just they're valuing something different. That's all.
Absolutely. I mean, I go to countries that, talking about that please and thank you, you know, overly grateful culture that we have here. When they just think you're being ridiculous. Stop saying thank you after I do absolutely everything.
Yeah,
it's just
and you don't need to, right? We don't even have a word for thank you really in Punjabi, and
oh,
it's great because it makes you think.
So what do you say?
Well, you just. Actually use your language in a much more creative way, and you show respect and gratitude in your actions and in the way you're being and in the way you know, in your manner. And it's amazing how it requires a greater depth and a greater sense of appreciation, and you can't just palm it off with one quick word.
You speak Spanish, Punjabi, you're obviously incredibly clever, you're very highly educated, you've got a PhD. I should have given you your proper title as introducing you. You are Dr. Mandy Rai. And what do you do to let your hair down? What is the wildest, most fun travel story you have?
Okay, so what do I do to...
Yeah, what's your most wildest? So do you ever go crazy on a night out and, like, wake up on a beach somewhere?
Tons. That is what travel is about, surely. That I remember...
Just because you're so clever, you know, can you let your hair down?
Firstly, I definitely am not clever. Like, yes, I have degrees and MBA, whatever, but that isn't what clever is. Clever, I think, is knowing... Clever is simply learning from your mistakes and being able to adapt. And sometimes we all have that and sometimes we don't. And sometimes if you've slept well and eaten well, you're able to do that more than other times, or if you're in a state of kind of flow. And I think what helps me let my hair down is actually being on the road, because I am in a much greater state of flow. When I'm static and when I'm in the normal routine, what I try and do is dance. That really helps.
Same here.
Dance, music, art, anything kind of creative, and being with people really uplifts me. And I guess this is why travel ticks all my boxes, because it's about being engaged. I mean, you cannot be in your head when you're traveling. I love that. I love the fact that you're totally in the present, because you're absorbing all that's happening around you, because you have to.
Which brings me on very nicely to our last question, which is always about music, because I think music and travel always go hand in hand. So if you had to think of one travel memory that is involved music, just one song that reminds you of a time and place of travel where something memorable happened, what is that song and what happened?
Oh my goodness, just that's a great question. Through my head about 10 different songs and 10 different moments, so many moments. Oh wow. I guess I was in Australia and I first heard that song. I think it's with the Buena Vista Social Club.
Na 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 na. Oh no, that's not. It's Bambalaya by the Gypsy Kings.
Okay, Gypsy Kings. And a friend of mine was playing it, and we were in this Kakadu National Park. So this park in the north of Australia. We're in a jeep. He had brought his guitar with him. And outside of the jeep, out of nowhere, a huge kangaroo came. And literally, if that kangaroo had jumped, forget the kangaroo. They on the jeeps in Australia, when you're on safari, they put a bar before the engine. And that kangaroo had no problem in just jumping over that bar and flattening us all. Like, that could have been the end of us. I will never forget that moment, because we were so into the music, we didn't even notice this kangaroo come out of nowhere. And then we all just absolutely panicked and had no idea whether to jump out of the jeep or stay in the jeep or go under the... We were just frozen and paralyzed. So that would be a music moment that I would never, never, never forget. And I just have to say that, you know, if there's one thing that I would like to leave us all with, it's the fact that every single second of your life is never going to come back again. This moment is never going to come back again. But it's not just this moment, it's actually our lives. They so quickly pass. Think about how quickly the last 10 years went. In this new decade, don't let it slip you by. Don't let it just happen to you. You happen to it. You decide what matters to you. You decide what your heart of hearts contribution is, what your service is, what you really stand for, and let that shine through. Let your magic, let your light shine through, because very quickly you'll be 10 years older and that won't have happened, and there's just no need to let that slip by. So just grab it with both hands. The values compass will guide you through it really quickly. It'll help you, you know, you can just figure out what really matters to you right at the beginning, so that all the drumbeat of decisions that make your life, like whether it's your daily decisions or your big decisions, all of them are so much easier to make and end up leading you to a more fulfilling, successful, happy life and happy decade. So go, get it now and just make that leap. Don't hesitate. It's a 15-minute tool and you'll love it. It's a game changer.
So much to think about there. Thank you, Mandeep, for coming on the Big Travel Podcast. Dr. Mandeep, I should say, and a truly inspirational conversation. And thank you so much for listening to the Big Travel Podcast.